Cheery Eid Mubarak to all of my Muslim brothers and sisters out there who are celebrating Eid al-Adha today. Also, let's take a look at a lady, one of our freedom fighters who has been hunted by the yet-to-be United States for 32 years and counting. On May 2nd, 1973, Black Panther activist Assata Shakur, formerly known as Joanne Chesimert, was pulled over by the New Jersey State Police, shot twice, and then charged with murder of a police officer. Mama Assata spent 6.5 years in prison under brutal circumstances before escaping out of the maximum security wing of the Clinton Correctional Facility for Women in New Jersey in 1979 and moving on to Cuba. The U.S. Department of Justice, the U.S. Attorney General, and the New Jersey State Police raised the reward or blood money being offered for the capture of Mama Assata Shakur to $1 million, encouraging mercenaries and freelance joy seekers to find, kidnap, and if necessary, break Cuba's law so that Mama Assata might be returned to the U.S. to resume her sentence and be tried on additional charges. Charges which also include the ridiculous and slanderous description of quote-unquote domestic terrorists. I think we saw on January 6th what domestic terrorists really look like. That description doesn't fit Assata Shakur.
Donc, deuxième partie consacrée à Assata Shakur. Et on va d'abord... Alors, je reviens sur ce que je disais. Alors, elle est donc emprisonnée de 73 à 79. Donc, il y a procès sur procès sur procès, d'après le bouquin de sa tante que je vais retrouver. Et en 79, il y a donc une équipe qui réussit à faire libérer Assata Shakur de la prison. Et elle fuit donc à Cuba. Donc c'est une équipe liée à la Black Liberation Army. Et donc c'est le fait d'armes, on va dire, de la Black Liberation Army, puisque elle ne sera jamais extradée. Et donc elle va sera en exil à Cuba. Et voilà. Donc en fait, elle reste, j'ai envie de dire, elle reste la figure de proue de la libération noire, Assata Shakur. On va écouter Fish. Alors, ça n'engage que moi, bien sûr. Hein. Les gens vont dire que tu encourages le crime, tu encourages le terrorisme, etc., etc. Oui, mais pour moi, Assata Shakur, c'est notre figure de proue. Je parle en tant que noir. Fishbone, Unyielding Conditioning.
Nobody feels for me. We've all been
Donc, la version extended mix, j'ai envie de dire, de The Sound of Revolution de Warzone avec le chant Revolution has come, time to pick up the gun, donc des Black Panthers. Donc, ça, c'était ce qu'on chantait notamment dans les manifestations de soutien à Huey Newton pour sa libération, donc entre 68 donc, et 70. Avant, on a écouté Unyielding Conditioning de Fishbone. Et on va écouter maintenant Black Superman de Above the Law.
This isn't bullshit, my friend. You heard about what's going on in there?
Heard a lot of bullshit talk, I know that much.
This isn't bullshit, my friend.
Do you know something?
Don't listen to me.
What do you know?
Maybe I do and maybe I don't. What I say is they got no business negotiating. We're gonna be going back in there with a bullet for everybody in the yard.
Oh, is that right?
We do it now, we do it later. Later ain't gonna be no use. Am I right, Al?
Now, wait a minute, Frank. We got a lot of angry guys in there. Black Muslims, Panthers, young lords. Besides your average antisocial.
So we gotta go in, right? Clean their clocks.
Hit the loot juice, it pulls up in the deuce. He gives me the scoop about the fake ass truths and how niggas out there wanna play. I take another hit of the wet and then I blast away. How far, player? Far enough to go off the edge. I push another nigga off the ledge, so I stumble as I slide to the Chevy. Yeah, my eyes kinda teary and gun kinda heavy. I'm a walking dead man, is what they call me when I'm coming. Got the big S on my chest, so I'm kinda gunning high powered on my way to the west side to check up on some chickens. It's a hell of a drive, so drive on. As I hit my dodo stick to the break of dawn, crime fighting's what I do, and niggas in my crew don't take lightly to you busters. And so we say fuck you, then buck you, tuck you in for the night as you think about the paper at the funeral site. So when I'm hanging with the clique and we in demand, I feel good that the city of angels call me Black Superman.
Alors, j'ai passé le morceau par rapport à l'introduction, donc le film où il parle de... alors, je ne sais plus de quel film il s'agit, mais on parle de Black Panthers, de Black Muslims, etc. etc. Petit trailer Blaxploitation, peut-être ? Ou alors non, on devait parler de Huey Newton, mais avant, il faut parler de... du parti, justement. On en était resté donc à la scission en 71, donc avec une partie des gens qui vont rejoindre donc la Black Liberation Army. Il y aura un petit dossier sur la Black Liberation Army, mais d'abord donc revenons aux Panthères Noirs. Huey Newton donc recentre le parti autour de lui, et donc il y a beaucoup d'expulsions, notamment les partisans d'Eldridge Cleaver, et puis de toute façon tous ceux qui commencent à, j'ai envie de dire, ruer dans les brancards par rapport à l'addiction de Huey, parce que Huey, lui, il veut donc donner un côté, comment dire, plus apaisé, plus modéré aux Panthères, sauf qu'en sous-main, il commence à s'intéresser à la pègre. En gros, il a adoré le film Le Parrain, et il se voit bien comme, quelque part, comme un espèce de mafieux noir. Donc, il va essayer de mettre la pègre d'Oakland sous sa férule. Il va commencer à vouloir régir le trafic de drogue, le proxénétisme, etc., etc. Les bars, voilà. Le Oakland Underground, on va dire ça comme ça. Alors, à cette période-là, alors là, il faut que je revienne aux années 60. Quand il y a eu les émeutes de Watts, donc dans la Californie du Sud, à l'époque, il y avait pas mal de gangs noirs qui ont décidé de se politiser et en fait de rejoindre les mouvements donc politisés, notamment les Black Panthers. Donc par exemple, dans la section Black Panthers de Los Angeles, donc il y a d'anciens membres de gang, je crois qu'il y a les Slow Sons, etc. Je crois que soit John Huggins, soit Bunchy Carter est un ancien membre de gang. Bref, les gangs donc, de ce politisme vont suivre les Panthers donc jusqu'en 70-71, et à partir de 70-71, vous aurez l'émergence des Crips et des Bloods. Les Crips, au départ, ça c'est pareil, on a dit et redit, à la base, les Crips, c'est des, entre guillemets, les petits frères des Black Panthers. Donc, ils ont une démarche plus sociale, etc. Et puis, petit à petit, ils vont se criminaliser. Avant, c'était pas une histoire de couleur. Il n'y avait pas le bleu d'un côté, le rouge de l'autre. Mais bon, ils vont se criminaliser. Et autour de, je crois que c'est Stanley, Tookie, Washington, et puis il y avait un autre. Enfin bref, ils vont se criminaliser. Il y aura la fameuse dispute, enfin discorde avec les futurs Bloods. En fait, c'est un gang qui s'appelle les Brims, je crois, les LA Brims, qui va rejoindre d'autres gangs. Parce qu'en gros, les Crips ont commencé à terroriser un peu les autres bandes. Et les autres bandes, en réponse, vont se fédérer. Donc, il y a les Brims, etc., etc. Et ça va donner les Bloods. Donc, il y aura d'un côté les Bloods, de l'autre côté les Crips. Alors déjà, il y a la guerre entre les deux. Et en plus de ça, il y aura le commerce de la drogue. Alors ça, on le voit notamment dans le film Snowfall. Donc, début des années 80, vous avez... Le crack qui arrive, parce que avant c'était pas si violent. Il y avait juste la guerre entre les gangs, mais il y avait pas de guerre de territoire au sens, enfin, de guerre liée à la vente de drogue, etc., et à l'expansion de ce commerce. Alors comme les Panthers ne sont plus aussi forts qu'avant, donc l'attraction, on va dire, l'attraction militante est nettement plus faible. Et puis, on va dire, à partir des années 70, l'eau a coulé sous les ponts, les gens sont fatigués, ou il y a la répression policière aussi, ce qui n'incite pas. Donc, les gangs vont commencer à monter, jusqu'aux années 80, et puis voilà, jusqu'à la situation aujourd'hui. Il y a eu des documentaires sur la guerre entre Crips et Bloods, mais ce n'est pas tout à fait le débat de cette émission, quoique. Et donc, UAP Newton va au niveau, donc, above ground, on va dire. Il va décider de mettre le Black Panthers au service de la machine politique locale, notamment le Parti démocrate. Et son but va être... donc, il y a une campagne municipale en 73 ou en 74, je crois. Et son but va être de mettre, de vouloir faire élire Bobby Seale comme maire de Oakland, avec Ellen Brown en colistière. Et donc, il va alors le but de UA Newton, ça va être donc de faire de Oakland une ville test. C'est-à-dire qu'en gros, ils se disent, si on gagne les municipales, donc Oakland, ça sera la première ville. Black Panthers, et on va faire profiter de l'expérience toutes les autres sections. Mais pour l'instant, tout le monde doit aider à l'effort collectif pour propulser Bobby Seale comme maire. Et donc, en gros, ce qui va se passer, c'est que toutes les sections seront invitées, toutes les sections sur le territoire, donc dans les autres États que la Californie, seront invitées à envoyer leurs militants pour aider à la campagne électorale de Bobby Seale. Donc, ça veut dire qu'il y a des sections qui vont fermer. Et donc, tout va se concentrer sur Oakland. Et le but, c'est que dès que Bobby Seale sera élu, les militants pourront revenir dans leur région, dans leurs États, et essayer, pareil, de mobiliser les gens pour qu'il y ait des mairies, entre guillemets, Black Panthers, etc. Sauf que Bobby Seale n'est pas élu. Il y a beaucoup de fonds, beaucoup d'énergie qui a été engagée dans cette campagne. Et donc, en fait, il y a des militants qui s'en vont. Et comme il y a des sections qui sont fermées, le parti, en fait, se rétrécit sur Oakland. Et UAP Newton donc, s'enfonce dans la drogue, la délinquance. Il frappe des femmes. En gros, en 1976, il est obligé de fuir à Cuba parce qu'il y a une prostituée qui a été agressée ou tuée. Et donc, bien entendu, par lui, et il est accusé. Et pendant ce temps-là, c'est Ellen Brown qui prend les commandes. Entre-temps, Bobby Seale a quitté le parti. Je crois qu'il a été expulsé. Beaucoup de gens ont été expulsés, en fait. Et il y a le côté mafieux et voyou des sbires de UA commence à prendre le pas sur le côté social, etc. Sachant en plus que UA Newton, pour financer sa consommation de cocaïne, détourne des fonds. Parce qu'en fait, le parti... alors il faut que je précise. En 77, le parti s'associe à un candidat qui s'appelle Carl quelque chose, Carl Williams ou quelque chose comme ça, qui lui, du Parti démocrate, qui lui est effectivement élu maire de Oakland. Donc, comme le parti a aidé le futur maire, il bénéficiera de subventions, etc. Pour différents programmes sociaux, il y a une école, il y a des trucs comme ça. Mais UA Newton, lui, puise là-dedans pour ses vices, on va dire ça comme ça. Ses vices, ses agapes, etc. Il s'isole de plus en plus. En gros, ça devient plus un mafieux, un parrain qu'un militant politique. Et il décide aussi de reprendre ses études, de s'inscrire à l'université, et donc il passera son doctorat. À un moment, il va en plus lui-même mettre les mains dans le cambouis en devenant délinquant, en braquant des commerces, etc., etc. Il devient accro au crack, puisque là il peut plus, au bout d'un moment, il peut plus payer sa consommation de cocaïne, et il décide, puisque c'est UA Newton des Black Panthers, d'utiliser son prestige pour soudoyer, terroriser les dealers de drogue. De toute façon, à un certain moment, c'est ce qu'il faisait. Il essayait de terroriser les dealers de cocaïne pour avoir ses doses. Et puis, au bout d'un moment, ça n'a plus marché. Enfin, je pense que jusqu'à un certain point, les gens le respectaient. Et donc, les gens n'osaient pas trop le secouer. Et puis surtout, lui, en fait, d'après ce qu'on dit, il venait voir les dealers, même si le dealer était armé, ça l'empêchait pas de discuter avec le dealer et d'essayer de lui extorquer de la drogue. Et au bout d'un moment, le dealer, lui, avait peur, en fait, de Huey. Alors qu'il pensait inspirer de la peur à Huey en étant armé. Tout se passe bien, entre guillemets, jusqu'à 89, où il y a un jeune dealer, donc, qui, lui, ne donne pas la drogue à Huey. Et lui, il n'est pas effrayé par Huey Fenton. Donc, lui, il tire. Je crois qu'il s'appelle Tyrone Robinson, celui qui a tiré. De mémoire. Faudrait que j'aille vérifier. Mais, alors, certains disent que c'était qu'il a été payé par le FBI ou la CIA, que c'était un agent, etc. En tout cas, ce sera le premier à résister à Huey. Et donc, lui, il va aller jusqu'à le tuer. Donc, c'est en août 89 ou en octobre 89 donc, que Huey Pinkerton donc, termine ses jours. On va écouter l'émission et puis je vais vous donner des précisions.
In the mid-60s, at so-called Liberation School, supported by the Black Panther Party, he was a revolutionary hero.
Huey P. Newton! And where is Huey?
In jail!
Newton spent a lot of time in jail. To the police, he was a dangerous thug. In 1967, he was convicted of killing an Oakland police officer, but two retrials later ended with hung juries. In 1974, he fled to Cuba to escape prosecution for killing a prostitute. Then last March, he was accused of embezzling state funds. Today, Charles Gary insists Newton was a victim, not a villain.
The FBI killed him. When I say killed him, I don't mean to put a gun.
Donc c'est bien Tyrone Robinson, le jeune dealer qui a tué Huey Pinkerton et qui était membre de la Black Guerrilla Family. Alors c'est, ironique parce que la Black Guerrilla Family, à la base, c'est un gang de prison fondé à l'initiative de George Jackson, donc un prisonnier qui avait rejoint en prison les Black Panthers et qui avait bénéficié justement du soutien de Huey Pinkerton. On passera quelque chose lié à George Jackson.
Who he's had. They destroyed him as a person, where he became a paranoid, sick person. It's a wonder that he was still alive.
Huey Newton helped shape the Black Panther Party, but he also shared in its demise. While Newton was charged with various crimes, including murder and assault, the party was losing power and membership. Eldridge Cleaver, who himself was purged from the radical group, refused to comment on Newton's death. Johnny Spain, however, said he was not surprised to hear of Newton's demise.
I think on the one hand, Huey did a lot to illustrate some of the ills of our society. On the other hand, I think personally, the pressure that came to bear on him for that very effort might have lent itself to destroying him.
Years ago, Newton was asked how he wanted people to remember him.
Well, I would like to think of him as a person who's very loved.
But just as people have debated over the effectiveness of the Black Panther Party, so will they debate the life of Huey Newton. Liz Gonzalez, Channel 5, Eyewitness News.
Joining me now are three women who were involved with the Black Panthers and who all once worked with Huey Newton. They are San Francisco State University lecturer Angela Davis, Concordia High School principal Erica Huggins, and managing editor and director of Black Scholar magazine Jonina Abram. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
This has got to be, I suppose, for you, all three of you, a very sad week because of what happened to Huey. No matter what had happened in the years intervening, I'm sure that all of you still had a special feeling for him from having worked with him in the early days. Tell me, how did you each become involved with the Black Panther Party? Angela, let's start with you.
Well, first of all, during the late 60s when I was studying in Europe, I learned about the emergence of the Black Panther Party and was profoundly affected by that. As a matter of fact, I decided to cut short my studies in Europe and return to this country in order to become involved in the Black Liberation Movement of that period. I worked with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which during that period entered into an alliance with the Black Panther Party. Erica and I worked together in Los Angeles in 1967-68.
Many people would think that those two would not fit together, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and the Black Panther Party, which came to have an image that many people associated with violence. How did those two work together?
Well, during that period, both SNCC and the Black Panther Party were responsible for ushering the black movement into a new era, I think. And it was especially the role that Huey and Bobby and others played in establishing a new stance, a stance of resistance. And all of us, who knows how many hundreds of thousands of young black people across this country, were affected by that new militant stance that was assumed by the brothers and the sisters who went in the community and who said, we will no longer allow the police to brutalize us. We will stand up with dignity.
We're going to come back in a minute to talking about that, the climate at that time and how this came to be. But Erica, how did you become involved?
I was a junior at Lincoln University. And I was 18 years old, and I read a Ramparts magazine article in which Huey was pictured strapped to a hospital gurney with a policeman standing over him laughing. Huey had a stomach wound, a gunshot wound in his stomach. And on the day when I read that article, I wondered what I was doing in college and why wasn't I out there supporting him and supporting black people. And so within a week, my friend and I, John Huggins and I, who later became my husband and was later killed by the FBI at UCLA in 1969, drove across country to aid in freeing Huey Newton. We joined the party shortly after we got to Los Angeles, and I worked with it from that time until 1981.
Now, the FBI does not agree that they killed your husband. I suppose the official statement has always been that he was killed by a rival group.
Their official statement was that they engendered the interactions that caused the murder, but that they did not pull the trigger. There's a document that states this.
Now, Janina, how about you? How did you become involved with the Black Panthers?
I joined the party, I guess you would say, in the sort of middle period in Detroit, Michigan, in 1972. I married a man who had joined the party, and both of us for a long time had talked about the importance of being in an organization that was fighting for black people's freedom and that we needed to be in an organization. And so I got involved in Detroit, Michigan.
Now, as all three of you look back at what has happened, look at it now through the sort of the periscope of history, do you think that the way it was done was the only way it could have been done, or could you have done things differently? How do you view it now in retrospect?
Well, of course, with historical hindsight, we can say that there are all kinds of things that we would have done differently, but then we did not know what we know now. I think that the legacy of Huey Newton is that he sensed what the sentiment of especially young black people must have been at a critical moment in the evolution of the civil rights movement, and to understand that there was a historical need to bring forth a new posture. Was quite brilliant. And of course, there were many mistakes that were made. Tracks have been written analyzing the mistakes, but there can be no doubt about the fact that we would not be where we are today had not that moment been seized by those who understood what I would call the historical necessities.
Part of the manifesto of the Black Panther Party said that, and I don't know if this is an exact quote, but that it would give people, the black people, the power to control their own destiny. Mm-hmm. Erica, do you feel that it did that? And how do you look at that now in terms of what's happening in black communities?
Harriet Tubman once said that he is not a slave who strikes a blow against for freedom. And I've never forgotten that. And what I feel about all of what we did was that we allowed for people to raise their consciousness, their understanding of themselves. And in a way, that understanding was a surface understanding, but the language changed. The way that black people carried themselves changed. What I felt was that something transforming was happening in the hearts and minds of people. Whenever change is occurring, it doesn't taste good. It's not necessarily pleasant, but in effect, the result is quite wonderful. I would say also that things are similar today, you know, those things are similar that were happening then. Mm-hmm. But I also have to say that I know because of the Black Panther Party, not only did my life change, but my mother's life changed, my sister's life, my brother's life. All of the people that I knew, whether I knew them well or not, their lives changed dramatically because a stand was being made. We were saying, yes, there was an Emancipation Proclamation, but it was a piece of paper. Now we have to really become free of those bonds, and we're willing and courageous enough to do it. And Huey was very, very courageous man.
Do you think?
Donc les derniers, là c'est Erica Huggins qui parle. Nous, on va revenir à Sata Shakur. Alors je vous ai dit qu'on allait parler de George Jackson. Alors allons-y avec ceci.
My mother, my father, sisters, my brother, Jonathan, they were intended to familiarize them with the situation I was faced with here. Of course, here in prison, we see the repression, the exploitation, the victimization of lower class.
In 61, Jackson was 19 years old, and he received the indeterminate sentence of 1 year to life.
Well, I was incarcerated under a one to life, a term they called for one to life, where I could have done 1 year and been released. I've done 10. That's more time than anybody in the state has ever done on a one to life. I went through all the processes. I tried to get out. I went to school, program, but now on the side, I was studying things that I felt that would help the community.
Those on the right saw him as the most powerful threat in the prison system.
I think racism is a control device, control mechanism, create an atmosphere whereby they can control inmates. And black is just a continuation.
He was the true revolutionary, the black communist guerrilla in the highest state of development.
I'd be the last one to say that Jonathan had suicide in mind. I'm certain that Jonathan felt that the police would have some concern, would give some concern to the lives of those five civilians. I'm thinking that Jonathan was trying to demonstrate to the public, to the people, just how he felt that these problems should be solved.
Was the incident for which you're charged now, was it a revolutionary act on your part?
You're asking me to confess to something?
As an assassin. Unless you wanted to. Did you kill the man?
Look, one of the most important elements of guerrilla warfare is maintain secrecy. I've killed nobody until it's been proven. And they'll never be able to prove anything like that.
Dovitt ne s'attendait certainement pas à recevoir il y a quelques jours cet avis d'expulsion.
Donc, on va passer un morceau de J-Wax de l'album Southside, le plus riche du cimetière.
Thank you.
les gros dans la tête. Mais pas de thunes et de cesse. D'après eux, tous sont déterres. Ils veulent vite se sortir de la misère. La faim justifie les moyens. Les petites forces prennent vite pour les doyens. Le monde du crime les a enserrés. Et rapidement les scrupules sont enterrés. Qu'on dirait qu'ils voient tout ce que l'argent peut apporter. Un monde de plaisir qu'ils n'auraient jamais soupçonné. Sans savoir qu'ils signent un pacte avec le diable. Sablier retourné, ta mort est dans les grains de sable. La noirceur dans le cœur devient importante. Au fur et à mesure que la bande devient glissante. Tout pour les billets, rien pour ta conscience. Ce soir quelqu'un va se faire asperger d'essence. Les seuls que sur la liste n'auront que la mort. Le plus riche du cible tient pourri dans son or. Car bloqué dans la tombe, personne ne l'entend crier. On n'achète pas le paradis avec des billets. Ils veulent tous le réalisme, n'auront que la mort. Les plus riches du cible tient pourri dans son or. Car bloqué dans la tombe, personne ne l'entend crier. On n'achète pas le paradis avec des billets. Que ferais-tu pour le réalisme? Voir le sang de tes ennemis dans un calice. Jacuzzi, terme de luxe, le sol est marbré. Dans ton duplex, la bouteille est déjà sabrée. Nos gamos sont garés dans le parking. Tous les suceurs te confirment, c'est toi le king. Casque intégral pour allumer les ennemis. Le business, c'est business, tous les moyens sont permis. Jusqu'à couper 5 fois sa dope avec la demeure. Faire taper des types qui sortent de la primaire. Ton karma dégoûte sa mère. Les billets s'enfuient de la même manière. Les cadavres dans la putain de ville. Les ennemis s'accumulent comme ta richesse. Arrête une fois exprès de zapper la fin de Scarface. Assuré sous l'océan à cause de la poids du gain. C'est dans les eaux profondes que nagent les plus gros requins. Ils veulent tous le réalisme, n'auront que la mort. Les plus riches du cimetière pourri dans son or. Car bloqué dans la tombe, personne ne l'entend crier. On n'achète pas le paradis avec des billets. Ils veulent tous le réalisme, n'auront que la mort. Les plus riches du cimetière pourri dans son or. Car bloqué dans la tombe, personne ne l'entend crier. On n'achète pas le paradis avec des billets. Grande maison spacieuse, putain d'intérieur. Toutes les semaines des soirées en ton honneur. Cocaïne à foison, belle et bonne tasse. Caviar et champagne, diamant, ça Versace. Tous tes ennemis c'est comme la cam des camés. Faire des trucs atroces pour pouvoir la consommer. Entraîné par le crime et cette vie de débauche. La malégale de débrouille quand c'est la mort qui te fauche. L'espérance de vie devient limitée. On t'achète l'argent sale avec tes propres péchés. Tous ces billets gagnés de cette putain de manière. Allez, montrons sans doute la cheminée de Lucifer. Chacun de ces mecs qui ont fait dans Dieu l'argent sale auront sûrement la plus belle des pierres tombales. À quoi bon vendre son âme en enfer pour finir le plus riche du cimetière? Ils veulent tous le réalisme, n'auront que la mort. Le plus riche du cimetière pourri dans son or. Car bloqué dans la tombe, personne ne l'entend crier. On n'achète pas le paradis avec des billets. Ils veulent tous le réalisme, n'auront que la mort. Le plus riche du cimetière pourri dans son or. Car bloqué dans la tombe, personne ne l'entend crier. On n'achète pas le paradis avec des billets. Billets.
Some of y'all heads up in the cloud. I'ma bring y'all back to earth. It's black back to burn. Bullshit y'all talking about. Out your mouth, I'm not concerned. Cause y'all got to learn. It's y'all turn like Detroit Red. When his head had an ultra perm. The long walk, I burn your bare heels. So throw on your boots. The game camouflage like army suits. But I can see it more clear. Cause I came with the coupe in here. Ring the alarm, inform the troops. Send them out into the world. Go to war on the fluke. Eye to eye with the enemy you sworn to shoot. Now I'm coming at your neck. Sick of hearing something wrong with me. Motherfucker, something wrong with you. When the cheek just way too smart to question. The enemy, the brothers of a dark complexion. The governments of the world is shark infested. They heavy on weaponry like Sharpton Heston, man. Look, it gets low, man. Low.
them like them.
Your logic does not
listen up. Come on,
it's my favorite mutant.
Death to the pigs is my basic statement. I spit street stories till I taste the pavement. Trying to stay out the pen where we face enslavement. Had a foolproof hustle till they traced the payments. I was gripping my palm around some shitty rum. Trying to find Psalm number 151. To forget what I'm owed as I clutch the Komodo red. Put down the bottle and come get the gun. Let's get off the chain like Kunta Kinte with a Mac-10. That one was gone like a dollar in a crack den. Steadily subtracting seeds and stems. Mind clouded through the weeds and phlegm. Numbing my brain off of that and the Jesus hymns. If we waiting for the time to fight these is thems. Telling us to relax while they ease it in. We're getting greased again. The truth I write is so cold it'll freeze my pen. I boots Riley, it's a pleasure to meet you. Never let they punk ass ever defeat you. They got us on the corner wearing pleather and see-through. All y'all's gold mines, they wanna deplete you. I ain't just finna rap on the track, I'm finna clap on the back. And it's been stacking it at 500 years before Iceberg ever leaned back in the lack. Before they told Rosa Black in the back. Before the CIA told Ricky Ross to put crack in the sack. And Gil Scott traded rapping for smack. This beat alone should get platinum plaques. I'd rather see a million of us ecstatic to scrap. Cause if we bapping them back, we automatically stack. Check it out.
It's my favorite view.
Yeah, this the cat like chewing C. Reboots me, activating the community. Up in the bay like Huey P. They suck a free, it remind me of the BK. There's love for me, but the beast gotta twist it. I'll untangle it. The black mind intertwined like the ropes they used to hang us with. This my favorite shit. I came in the game with a new way to spit. Got your questionnaire, who you banging with? Take it back to M-Hotep. Go a step deeper like a poor righteous teacher with holy intellect. Killer flow for all my real niggas left. But inform the failure to jig-a-boo that there's been a death. Once again, you can feel hip-hop underground, still about my guap. Gangsta like fuck the cops. Tell him Kweli, revolutionary MC. And that ain't about to stop.
I ain't rocking with you. So what you gon' do?
It's my favorite mutant.
I ain't rocking with you. Your logic does not go.
My favorite view.
Record deals gon' feed your season, pay your bills because they not.
how much money they got. All y'all records sound the same. I'm sick of that fake thug R&B rap scenario all day on the radio. Same scenes in the video, monotonous material. Y'all don't hear me though. These record labels slang our tapes like dope. You could be next in line and sign and still be writing rhymes and broke. You would rather have a Lexus or Justice, a dream or some substance, a Beamer, a necklace or freedom. Still a nigga like me don't play or hate, I just stay awake. This real hip hop and it don't stop till we get the popo off the block. They call it hip hop, hip hop.
RBG, Red, Black and Green, Revolutionary but Gangster, Death Prez, Hip Hop. Avant, on avait My Favorite Mutiny par Dekou. Alors, on va essayer quand même de parler d'Assata Shakur et de son histoire dans le peu de temps qui nous reste. Je ne sais pas si on va faire un troisième volume. Alors, Assata Olugbala Shakur. Alors, son nom de départ, on va dire, c'est Joan Deborah Byron. Elle est née le 16 juillet 1947 à New York. Et donc, quand ses parents divorcent, elle part en Caroline du Nord, du côté de Wilmington, chez ses grands-parents maternels et sa mère. Et sa mère va se remarier et revenir à New York. Donc elle reste, elle passe son adolescence donc en Caroline du Nord et elle revient faire ses études à Manhattan puis à New York au City College de New York donc. Et là elle se rapproche du mouvement Black Power, enfin des groupes qui, des activistes qui sont sur le campus. Donc elle se rapproche déjà du mouvement Golden Drums. Et c'est là qu'elle va rencontrer son futur mari, Louis Chesimard, d'où le nom Joan Chesimard. Elle va interagir avec de nombreux autres groupes et activistes, donc que ce soit des pacifistes, des gens contre la guerre du Vietnam, des afrocentristes, donc du mouvement Black Power. Alors, c'est décrit dans son bouquin, Assata Shakur, An Autobiography, que je n'ai pas là sous la main. Et alors, son nom, donc Assata Olugbala Shakur, elle le change en 71. Alors, Assata, c'est celle qui lutte. Olugbala, ça veut dire amour du peuple. Et Shakur qui remercie. Je pense que c'est par rapport au Swahili. Et on va dire beaucoup de militants Black Power changeaient de nom pour ne pas avoir le nom d'esclave, le nom de naissance. Et donc, il prenait un nom lié à l'Afrique ou à l'islam pour ceux qui étaient plus Black Muslims. Alors, pourquoi le nom lié à l'Afrique ? Parce qu'il ne faut pas oublier qu'on est dans les années 60 et donc il y a la décolonisation, il y a les indépendances des pays africains. Et donc, il y a tout un mouvement, toute une vague de contestation qui monte. Et donc, ça a été l'occasion de souder, on va dire, les Noirs américains et les Africains. C'est amusant de dire ça maintenant parce que en ce moment c'est pas du tout ça. C'est pas du tout ça. Je vous conseille notamment l'émission de Double G avec Gris et Gizo et Voraci où il parle de ça. Enfin, Gizo qui parle notamment de la réaction de LV de South Central Cartel par rapport à certaines choses et puis les mouvements de boycott des Noirs américains par rapport aux immigrants africains et puis il y a un mouvement qui s'appelle Firstborn African ou quelque chose comme ça. Enfin, on va dire que c'est l'équivalent du MAGA, mais pour les Noirs américains. C'est-à-dire en fait, du racisme, du tribalisme plus que stupide. Je pense que Huey Newton, Malcolm X et Martin Luther King se retournent dans leur tombe quand ils voient des abrutis pareils. Ce n'est que mon avis, bien sûr. Alors, et puis bon, les Noirs américains, c'est encore quelque chose. C'est spécial. Enfin, la majorité d'entre eux, j'ai envie de dire. Donc, on revient à Sata Shakur. Oui, il y a une minorité. Heureusement, ceux qui étaient dans les Black Panthers n'avaient pas tout à fait cet esprit-là, je pense. Donc, on revient donc à Sata Shakur, que je me disais. Donc, elle rencontre donc des militants liés au Black Power. Je pense qu'elle a dû rencontrer les gens du SNCC, etc., etc. Et elle rencontre donc des militants du Black Panther Party sur le campus et elle décide d'aller à Oakland voir le siège. Et donc en 70, elle adhère au Black Panther Party, mais elle va le quitter en 71, notamment parce qu'elle trouvait que le Black Panther Party ne collaborait pas assez avec d'autres organisations. Elle était donc à Sata Shakur à la branche de Harlem. Donc, elle est revenue à New York, hein, bien sûr. Donc, je pense qu'elle a côtoyé Afeni Shakur, etc., etc. Alors, Shakur, oui, c'est pas un nom de famille. Shakur, ça veut dire une personne qui remercie. Donc, il y a Mutulu Shakur, il y a Afeni Shakur. Enfin, pas mal de gens ont pris le nom Shakur. Alors, en 71, elle rejoint la Black Liberation Army. Et dès 72, elle est ciblée. Donc, c'est une cible pour le FBI. Alors, arrive le fameux incident du 2 mai 73. Donc, en fait, alors la BLA, c'est une organisation clandestine de lutte armée. Donc, vous aurez compris que ce n'est pas des gens qui vont circuler librement, qui vont faire leurs courses tranquillement. Ils sont en cavale permanente. Donc, le 2 mai 1973, il y a un contrôle de police sur le New Jersey Turnpike. C'est un pont qui relie notamment la Pennsylvanie et l'État de New York, hein, il me semble. C'est très fréquenté. Donc, un contrôle de police sur le New Jersey Turnpike. Donc, Sata Shakur est dans une voiture avec deux activistes du BLA. Donc, inutile de dire qu'ils ne vont pas s'arrêter. Donc, il y a une fusillade. Et il y a un mort chez les policiers et un mort chez les militants. Le mort, c'est Zaïd Shakur, je crois. Je vérifie, voilà. Zaïd Shakur. Et le policier, c'est Werner Forster. Alors, Sata Shakur est accusée du meurtre du policier alors qu'elle était brutalisée par son collègue. Et donc, les preuves montrent qu'elle était incapable d'utiliser une arme et même incapable de faire quoi que ce soit. Malgré toutes les preuves, elle est condamnée. Elle est jugée coupable de meurtre en 77 et condamnée à la perpétuité avec une peine de sûreté de 30 ans. Donc en 79, Sata Shakur s'échappe hein, de la prison de Clinton dans le New Jersey. Donc elle va rester 5 ans underground aux États-Unis, je suppose, et elle part à Cuba en 1984 où on lui a accordé l'asile politique. Donc, en 2013, le FBI a placé Shakur sur la Most Wanted Terrorist List. Donc, voilà pour Sata Shakur, donc son parcours. Et on va trouver pour vous un petit dossier sur la Black Liberation Army.
Nine members of the so-called Black Liberation Army were indicted in New York today for a series of attacks on policemen. The charges against them include murder, assault, and robbery.
The FBI said today it has uncovered a terror conspiracy, a conspiracy involving all the major underground leftist organizations in the United States. The FBI revelation apparently prompted by a series of recent shootouts with members of the Weathermen and the Black Liberation Army groups. The Bureau has now ordered a nationwide hunt for four fugitives it described as extremely dangerous.
They will kill people to attain their ends. And what are their ends? Their ultimate ends have to be the overthrow of a democratic government as we know it to be.
At one point considered by the FBI to be the most dangerous terrorist group in America, the Black Liberation Army occupies a controversial place in the struggle for black power. However, the actions of the BLA cannot be understood in isolation. They must be located within the broader context of several hundred years of violent racial oppression and black resistance. In the most literal sense, the precursor to the Black Liberation Army was the Revolutionary Action Movement. Formed in 1962 by Donald Freeman, Wanda Marshall, and Ahmed Muhammad, RAM combined Maoism with revolutionary black nationalism. RAM took inspiration from other communist and nationalist struggles, namely the Chinese and Cuban revolutions. Following the teachings of Chairman Mao Zedong, RAM leaders believed the only pathway to black liberation was a violent revolution or a protracted people's war. By 1967, RAM had begun organizing the black urban subproletariat into a paramilitary force called the Black Guards. The Black Guards were a proto-guerrilla formation, engaging in clashes with police forces and operating primarily as a defense army. At its peak, RAM had thousands organized into a black nationalist army, with 1,000 units in Cleveland alone. RAM understood that in order for its militancy to be truly effective, it had to be connected to a broader above-ground political organization. In fact, before the assassination of Malcolm X, RAM was planning to function as the underground counterpart to Malcolm's Organization of Afro-American Unity. The downfall of RAM occurred in 1969, as a combination of intense governmental repression, leadership disputes, and the growth of other black nationalist groups such as the Black Panthers forced RAM to dissolve.
Alors, je coupe la Black Liberation Army. Comme je disais, je vous parlais d'une base souterraine. Donc, c'est la lutte armée. On appellerait ça l'ultra gauche aujourd'hui. C'est comme ce qu'ont fait les maoïstes avec la gauche prolétarienne. Puis il y avait la Prima Linea, les Brigades Rouges, etc., etc. en Italie. En Allemagne, c'est la Fraction Armée Rouge. Mais théoriquement, ces organisations... Enfin, le but, c'est d'avoir une partie... Et puis, bon, les Corses aussi et les Basques ont le même genre de fonctionnement, je crois, hein. Après, il faudrait avoir des spécialistes de ça. Mais le but, c'est d'avoir une partie overground qui est théoricienne et une partie underground qui est la partie active. Et il n'y a pas l'un sans l'autre, en fait. Parce que s'il y a juste que la partie underground, bah, c'est juste du banditisme, en fait. Et donc, la Black Liberation Army le but, c'est notamment de lutter contre les dealers de drogue. Donc, ils rançonnaient les dealers, ils détruisaient la drogue. Il y a clairement une allusion à ça dans Snowfall, justement. Donc, ils détruisaient la drogue. En fait, le but, ils allaient à l'encontre de ce qui va devenir l'activité des gangs, en fait, dans les années 70-80. Donc, ils détruisaient la drogue. Ils essayaient de supprimer donc l'usage de drogue, enfin d'héroïne, etc. Ils cambriolaient des banques, etc. Pour les fonds, justement, pour pouvoir acheter des armes, etc. Et voilà. Pour la Black Liberation Army, on continue le documentaire.
Many members joined the Black Panther Party or the Republic of New Africa. And much of the remaining organizational infrastructure was absorbed by the Republic of New Africa. The Black Liberation Army is often officially recognized as being formed in 1970, but an exact date is hard to determine since the BLA was never a centralized organization, but was instead a decentralized network of various cadres and organizers. Following much of the same strategy and ideology of the Revolutionary Action Movement, the BLA was never meant to be its own unique political entity. It was always envisioned as the clandestine wing of a broader black nationalist mass movement. Kwame Ture explained that the role of the guerrilla movement is to, quote, back up the demands of the above-ground political organization, unquote. The BLA is often associated with the Black Panther Party, and for good reason. Many members of the BLA and BPP worked under the assumption that the BLA was to act as the illegal wing of the Panthers. Many members of the BLA were Panthers themselves that had been forced underground by police repression, and BLA cadres often viewed themselves as extensions of the party and enforcing their demands. However, the relationship between the Black Liberation Army and the Black Panther Party was strained and controversial. Although leaders of the Black Panthers, such as Huey Newton, understood and openly called for the creation of an underground wing of the party, they often balked at serious attempts to establish such a formation. For a brief time, Panther newspapers encouraged party members to join the BLA, but soon backtracked. Factions emerged in the party between those that called for an intensification of underground activity and those that wanted this struggle to remain legal for the time being. Federal operatives and informants intentionally inflamed this disagreement, and in 1971, the Oakland-based national leadership, led by Huey Newton, expelled many members of the militant faction, including its leader, Eldridge Cleaver, and hundreds more quit the party, labeling Newton and the national leadership as reformist and adventurist. Most of the expelled Panthers went directly into the underground and joined the BLA, and as a result, BLA actions actually intensified after the split. Despite no longer being associated with the Black Panthers, the BLA still operated as a militant wing of the Black liberation struggle. They engaged in political assassinations, police killings, bombings, and robberies. It must be understood that these were not random acts of violence designed to inflict terror onto a broader population. Rather, they were all specifically targeted and planned with concrete goals in mind. Political assassinations were responses to the arrests or murder of Black activists, and it forced state forces to ease the repression of the movement. Cops with a reputation for being brutal were targeted and killed, which in turn forced precincts to adopt less brutal methods or to withdraw from certain communities entirely.
Alors, on va écouter maintenant le témoignage de Monifa Bandele, qui a rencontré Assata Shakur à Cuba.
Land, your language, but not your legacy. Reclaim it at africanancestry.com.
From what I understand, you had experience of meeting Assata Shakur in Cuba, right? Were you able to have a conversation? What was the whole interaction like?
Absolutely, yes. I was able to meet with and talk and to be in community with two sisters. One well-known, Mama Assata Shakur, who was our amazing freedom fighter, and also Mama Nahanda Abiodun, who was also a political exile. She recently passed away, but she was someone who was indicted for liberating Assata Shakur from prison. So the comrades that are Nahanda's were in prison, but she actually also escaped and was in Cuba, as well as Assata, who was someone who was freed from prison. And so we were just blessed, you know, I want to say it was 1998, to go to the World Youth Festival in Cuba, in Havana, Cuba, with hundreds of young people from the United States, but tens of thousands from around the world. And our delegation within the U.S. delegation, which was the Malcolm's grassroots movement, we got our own, meetings with elders there and people who had supported Black liberation movements in the past. And Assata and Nahanda, who we were like celebrating, cheering, giving them a standing ovation, they said, "We love this and we appreciate this, but our comrades are still locked up. You know, they're still imprisoned." For freeing us, you know, or for Nahanda making sure she didn't get incarcerated alongside of them. And if you really want to celebrate us and to love us, you know, work to free our political prisoners. And for many of us, we had already been doing some political prisoner work. We remembered Geronimo Pratt had gotten out of prison maybe just a few years before that. For like really young people, when Nelson Mandela got out, I think in like 91. So we were like already excited about that. But that charge from those, you know, elders, freedom fighters, it put a different fire in the belly, right? And that's when the Black August Hip Hop Project was conceived of. The two people who led it was my husband, Lumumba Bandele, and Baye Adolfo from our group. And we all then, you know, became, it became like a central thing that we did every year during Black August. So Black August was a tradition that came out of the California prison system to celebrate people like George Jackson and Kotari, you know, to memorialize them. Every August, the prisoners would fast, they would study, would work out, there'd be no fights, you know, they didn't engage in anything antisocial. It was a month of discipline to honor their fallen freedom fighters. And so we were like, this is perfect. Take this and do something that's cultural, because we know what our folks want to hear, and embed in that the principles of Black August from out of the prison system, teach them about Attica, because New York and the Attica Rebellion is linked also to Black August. People don't know, it was like right after. And then also talk about those political prisons that are still in. And it was widely successful. We also did, we went back to Cuba several times with our Black August delegation. And one time we took Common with us. And then when he got back, he wrote Song for Asada.
Donc Monifa Bandele, à propos d'Assata Shakur, qui lui a rendu, elle lui a rendu visite plusieurs fois à Cuba. On va terminer. Alors, il y a les news à faire et on va passer quelques clips. Alors, les news à faire, est-ce qu'on met l'instrumental ou on n'a pas le temps? On n'a pas le temps. On fait les news vite fait. Donc, Réservoir Raiders prépare une émission avec Pimp Césaire et Bolo, donc du RD, autour de la Bay Area, autour de l'album Stacking Chips de 3X Crazy. 1987, 3X Crazy, ça ressemble beaucoup à du E-40. Le nouveau Up The Zine, le numéro 27 est prêt. Au sommaire, scène plongeon à fanzine hardcore des années 80 de Nantes. Perspective à fanzine de Lille qui est revenu après une interruption de 15 ans, je crois, et qui a déjà sorti 3 numéros. Et Time To Burn, un fanzine punk noise des années 90-2000. C'est 5 euros port compris. Si vous voulez en avoir un Up The Zine, il faut contacter donc Jeff Siskelas du côté de Toulouse. Un nouveau nom pour le festival du Bal des Vauriens, c'est Résilience, donc de la Hoy, hexagonale. Sinon, on apprend la disparition de Perry Bamonte, qui a été le guitariste et claviériste de Cure depuis 1990. Il avait quitté le groupe en 2002, il était revenu plus tard. Il avait 65 ans, qu'il repose en paix. Decibelius a perdu son bassiste Jean-Christophe Garcia Martinez le 16 décembre dernier, qu'il repose en paix aussi. Le 26 avril 2026, on annonce à Pessac, c'est une salle qui est... Pessac, c'est la ville. Hein. Donc c'est dans une salle dont je n'ai pas retenu le nom, c'est 18 avenue de Bardanac, donc à Pessac, donc près de Bordeaux. Un concert avec Whitefire, Titan et High Power. Donc High Power qui se reformerait pour une date avec Thierry Sorondo, le guitariste originel. On ne connaît pas le line-up pour l'instant. Et pour terminer, nouveau numéro de Rockardy, c'est le numéro 68, avec au sommet New Christ, The Eternal Youth, Les Naufragés, Johnny Mafia, Pygmy Records, The Segments et pas mal d'autres choses. Voilà pour les news. Et on va écouter, nous, des extraits de quoi ? On va écouter la bande-annonce de The Legend of Nigger Charlie. On va écouter aussi des extraits d'un film qui s'appelle The Bus Is Coming. Et puis, voilà.
He's been here on the Carter Plantation for 20 years, and he's never given a lick of trouble.
You got no right to be free, boy.
He is dependable, sound, and healthy.
Only a man's got a right to be free, and you ain't a man.
Do I hear $1,000?
I'm a free man.
Get up!
The Legend of Nigger Charlie. They should have known that no one was more dangerous than a slave who had killed to be free, because he had to keep on killing to stay free.
Just one foot on this property, nigga Charlie, will kill him!
Somebody warned the West. Nigga Charlie ain't running no more. Rated PG.
Let's look at what's happened to us in the last month. Now, on the 10th of this month, not last year, school refuses to integrate. Just last week, police kill Joe Mitchell. That's not quite true. Pig Falls killed Joe Mitchell.
Right on.
Now, why was he killed? First, he got the first blacks on the police force. Second, he sent the first black man to Congress. Third, he got a white judge fired. But when he started talking about sending little black kids across the tracks to integrate honky school, His ass had to go. That's why he was killed.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, his brother Billy just came home from Vietnam last week with his white friend. And I went by to see him, and he's too chicken shit to join us. Now, what's the matter with us? Blacks ought to blow this town up.
Yeah, right on.
And Billy ought to light the damn fuse.
Yeah.
Michael! Yeah. Now, wait. You wait just a damn minute. Is that why you're calling this rally? Is it?
Right on, sister. All right, everybody clear out. I want to talk to my sister. You hear that?
Well, I don't give a damn who she is.
Voilà, c'est un extrait du film The Bus Is Coming de 71 qui parle de... Alors là, c'est un groupe de militants. Qu'est-ce qu'on va vous passer d'autre? Est-ce qu'on vous passe Sweet Sweet? Non, on vous passe un extrait du film Brothers qui parle justement de George Jackson et de Angela Davis. Et c'est un extrait où on a l'acteur Ron O'Neill de Superfly qui est donc un des... compère prisonnier de George Jackson qui est joué par le gars de Hitman. Je me souviens plus de son nom.
That's right, you twist the end there. That keeps it from touching your eardrum. Right. Now the oil, which will prevent infection.
Bernie Casey, voilà, Bernie Casey. Donc dans ce film, on a Ron O'Neill, Bernie Casey et Vonetta McGee.
Now, the kicker. Water. Get a few drops from it. See, it's the water that is really blocking out the sound. How's that? What? Yeah, you still. Now we can think and talk without having to shout. Can you dig where I'm coming from? Never mind. Okay.
You just kind of rest him right there on the lobes, like, huh?
Right, so we can talk.
Okay.
Now, this ain't no nigger bridge here.
Oh, yeah, this white folks game.
You got it. This is a game of pure tactics and concentration. Right? These little things in front are called pawns. Their job is, well... The pawns are like the guards. They are expendable. They're the most expendable pieces on the board. Their job is to protect the king. That's the king right there. This number right next to it, that's the queen. Miss Anne to you. Now, theoretically, the white side should always win.
Why?
Because the white side always moves first.
On va terminer avec qu'est-ce qu'on va écouter? Deadpool, on a écouté Above the Line, Guerrillas and Gangsters de Dalench Mob, et puis un morceau de Paris.
Flipping the script, yeah. The brand new 1993 fat gorilla shit. All you Rudy Poo, nickel-plated punk ass busters. You're fostering on the mob, it's mandatory that we fuck ya. However could you call us gangsters, you little prankster, yeah. You analyzed it wrong, so now it's time for me to bank ya. Street politicians on a mission, and I'm wishing to clear the rumor up because my niggas keep bitching, yeah. About the little story that you print with your ink. I never ever bit my tongue, your shit stinks. Bust the crack, yeah. The interviewer, I shake you to the sewer. I gap your ass up and make it stink like manure. So if you wanna print it bright, you sucker. Cause we can all be some fight motherfuckers. And if you disrespect me, I'ma bank you. Beat the Spice One, but gorillas ain't gangsters. One, two, three, I'ma
G, as in gorilla. C, I'm a killer. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, I'm a G, as in gorilla. C, I'm a killer. Diggity dung, it's the L beard, MLB, and that's where I'm from. Yep. Had the 22 pulled over, gets popped. Now my ropes with the Glock did the new stash pop. Lady kicked the habit and he still smoked blunts. Jody got the O with the monster bumps. So here I go, so can I go on the back track? Yep. Cause I'm still much black, hitting devils with the bat. So Mr. Penny Pad, don't even try to trip. No diss to no G's, ain't on that dip. Gorillas out the jungle, but we still in the mist. I'm straight glitching. So raise on up before we bank ya. Beast the King T, but gorillas ain't gangster. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, I'm a G, as in gorilla. C, I'm a killer. 1, 2, 3, I'm a G, as in gorilla. C, I'm a killer. Up. No, I'm not shutting up. He say, she say, we gotta clear the shit up. You wanna label me a black gangster, but I'm a black man who was saved by a savior. Knocking at your door, you open. He swung, he missed, he pissed when we hit him in the head with a brick. Gorillas in the mist with the silent kill skills. I huffed and I puffed when you dissed your ill feel. Now I gotta buck ya. Plus I never trust ya. A devil in drag, so fuck it, I'll just touch ya. Sleepwalkers, no more shit. Talking quiet as kept. I should've cut him like the Night Stalker. Stomp down, hard like a billy goat. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, I gotta cut his fucking throat. If you disrespect me, I'ma bank ya. Beats the Compton's most, but gorillas ain't gangsters. 1, 2, 3, I'm a G, as in gorilla. C, I'm a killer. 1, 2, 3, I'm a G, as in gorilla. C, I'm a killer.
C'était donc C'était donc Gorillaz and Gangsters par Dalen Schmob. On termine avec Guerrilla Funk de Paris.
Yeah.
modern-day spin-off group of the Black Panther Party allegedly looted yet another gun store late last night in downtown Oakland. This appears to be a growing pattern of social unrest in inner-city communities. The group, which has been dubbed the Oakland 8 by local authorities, is believed to be stockpiling a large arsenal of weapons for uses which have yet to be disclosed.
Right back up in you with a motherfucking dose of the truth in your house. Niggas can't come close to the PR, the O-B-L-A-C-K. Still looking for a way to make us rise each and every day. Brothers, listen to the sound when I pump P-Dog and I'm hitting in your trunk with a trunk. Put that down home shit you love. I never slip tripping with the monster buzz. You know what's go on, and I won't stop coming with the militant grooves that'll keep y'all spirits lit. Long as niggas keep dying, I'ma keep serving. Hip hop to the bullshit stop. Back in the name of Allah, the one true God. I stand tall, bringing truth to all y'all. So fuck that devil and pass me the fish. You know I never switch, and that's it. Cause the shit is out of hand. All I do is see the world just stand around and watch niggas drop like flies around the clock. But I never underestimate the fact that America still hate blacks, so I gotta act. Ever since I was 3/5 of a man, it was clear that somebody had to take a stand. So I strive to survive in a place where your worth is determined by race. Ain't that a bitch? Nothing funny where I'm coming from, so I don't wear a smile, cause I know they got me on file. Long as niggas gotta live in this hellhole, I'ma freak the motherfucking folk so the people know. I recognize that as long as young brothers stay sweet, we born to die, shit, and that's deep.
Pursuit on Interstate I-80 in the aftermath of a four-bank robbery attempt.